This is Kathy Liebert, and you're listening to the Top Tier Home Game Proco Podcast.
Welcome to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, bringing you tales, tips, discussions, and great interviews, led by two veterans of the poker home game scene. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Robbie and Bruce.
Welcome, everyone, and happy holidays. It's a busy time of year, and we're grateful you've taken the time to include us. You'll be glad you did. In this episode, Robbie has a tale of how he found a poker superstar visiting his part of the world, and with some creative maneuvering, he was able to wrangle a lunch with him. I explore the annual topic of including a charity element in your home game contest. We have a great guest, Dr. Alan Schoonmaker, noted poker author of a string of poker books and articles. His latest book, How to Beat Small Poker Games, is a perfect resource for home game players. Hey, Chelsea. Ho, ho, ho. Let's go.
Hey, how you running? Beats, suckouts, triumphs, and tragedies from last week's home game play.
Well, Robbie, you've got some exciting events that just happened, and you're still running pretty good, it looks like.
Well, if that's what you mean about being upstuck two games in a row, then I'm not so sure. those were not well, such great events. I'll just open with
upstuck's
this.
Upstuck's better than being stuck.
That's true. Everyone who remembers upstuck is that, you know, you were winning, but then you end off the night not winning as much as, you know, when you had at your peak. So that sort of happened for the last couple games, and, you know, you kind of just sort of, you feel like you've lost when that happens to you, when happens game after game.
Yeah, you get just as dejected. It really does.
Ugh, gotta tell you. So that was annoying, but I'm sure you were not alluding to that. I will tell our listeners here at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, wow, what an amazing, you know, it's Hanukkah right now, and, you know, the Festival of Lights for the Jewish people, and I gotta tell you, I feel like I sort of had a Hanukkah miracle, that came up. Antonio Esfandiari, the magician, everyone knows and loves him from all the poker TV that he's done over the years. He won the big one for One Drop. I noticed, a few days ago that he was, you know, on Twitter, he was posting, that, you know, oh, he's, doing a wine tasting at, you know, at some place in Israel. And I'm like, what? He's here? And I didn't, and like, I looked back and like, you know, lo and behold, he had been here already for 5 days and I had no idea. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to finally see, I have to find a way to meet him. It's like, he's in my backyard, right? So, okay. So I was like, I responded right away, like hoping maybe he'll respond to me. You know, will you come to the Tel Aviv area? It's sort of like near my work offices. You know, I went to sleep, didn't get a reply. I wake up in the morning. And lo and behold, you know, he says, yeah, I'm still here. You know, today is my last day. Or tomorrow, this was like, it was midnight. And then like, he said, well, tomorrow's my last day. And, you know, I get this when I wake up 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, okay. So I've got like a Hail Mary shot here. How can I possibly figure out a way to get to meet him? And, you know, so I was thinking and I was like, you know what? Let's make a video. Right. So, you know, here on a podcast, we can't, show you the exact video. You could find that on my Twitter or, you know, Antonio, put it out there, but let's at least listen to the clip and you guys can hear, the track of the video that we made to try and, get Antonio to pay attention.
Welcome to Israel, Antonio. We would really love to meet you and we're going to use our one time. This is Shira. We're from Poker Update. We'd love to see you and happy birthday tomorrow. In case it doesn't happen, we'll see you in Vegas someday.
And let me tell you, Bruce, the one time it worked, it was unbelievable.
The magic phrase. Good job.
I really could not believe it. He even wrote back. He's like, that was strong. You know, like it was really good. So like, you know, literally this happened from one moment to the next. We had no time to prepare. He says, you know, here's the number. Go ahead and call my friend. And I called the friend and we made an arrangement like 15 minutes after this happened. Me and my colleague, we got into a cab and we joined him for brunch. And like, you know, I'm like any other fan out there. I was like kind of starstruck. It doesn't matter how long you've been podcasting about poker or writing about poker or being on, you know, when you meet one of the people, one of the main poker people in the world, it's just like, oh my God, this is so cool. So it was just really amazing. And you know, I gotta tell you, the first thing he told me, and he's like, you know, a lot of people, you know, they write back, and I get a lot of mentions and stuff, but no one really made a video. It was the video that was the kicker. I showed it to my friend, and we really got a kick out of it. In all my travels around the world, you know, this is the first time I've ever invited someone to come and you know, join me and come and meet me. So, you know, kudos to you, buddy. So that was just like as I said, it's a Hanukkah miracle or something. I don't know. It was very surreal. You know, we got to sit with him for over an hour. We met his father, a really wonderful gentleman, Mr. Bijan Isfandiari, and, you know, just sort of shooting the breeze. You know, it wasn't like an interview or anything like that. It's just like a glimpse, a window into his life. And we talked about his visit to Israel and, you know, the types of things that he saw. And, you know, he did a lot of really cool stuff here. And, you know, he came out, and his father as well, with like a really good impression of the country. And, you know, as someone who lives here, of course, it was really, you know, great to hear that.
Well, I think that just goes to show the two C's, creativity and courage. you know, I mean, that's great. You know, and I applaud that. And you know, you've heard the clip here. I'll put a link to it on our homepage for this particular podcast, so you can actually see the video and get the full impact of it. But I as a marketing and a promotions person, you know, I've been most of my life. I think that's great. You know. Coming up with a creative idea, following it through. I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
Right.
You could say, I can't make it. Sorry. You know,
exactly. I said to myself, you know, worst case, so I'll look stupid. It's fine.
Yeah.
It was very, very, very cool. And like, you know, I guess that's, you know, pretty much as well as you can run these days. You know, and I just got to tell you, you know, the fallout of that, you know, that evening, you know, all the guys in my dad's poker game, they were like, so Robbie, you going to join us tonight for the game? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm kind of having dinner with Doyle Brunson, so.
that would be a huge get if you could ever,
right? Well, that
ever,
that has not happened. Yeah. Maybe it's happened to you, Bruce, though. How have you been running lately?
No, I've been running okay. I've been slow and steady, which is kind of like I like it. No big ups, no big downs. I've been mostly positive, you know, for maybe up a buy-in or half a buy-in, and so I can't complain. Still been playing a lot. So we have to remind everybody this time of year. In fact, our group is traditionally, I think this might be the fourth or maybe even the fifth year we've done it, had a tournament. Like 2 weeks before Christmas, I think it's actually scheduled for this coming Sunday, which is like the day after this was released. Mm-hmm. That includes a charity slam. Of course, it's the holiday season, and people think of festivities and family and work and gifts and decorations and things. But hopefully, some of the focus goes towards you know, towards helping others and the gift of giving and charity and it's the most
wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, cash game or tournaments, you can always put the element. Our particular game that we've had, it's a tournament where the small portion of the buy-in goes towards the food bank, and then there's bonus chips that are received if you show up with, you know, unwrapped gifts for Toys for Tots or some non-perishable food item for the food bank. So, you know, that type of thing you can do on a tournament, and really makes it fun. And you know, going the next day, dropping that off at the two charities is heartwarming. Or if you're just having a cash game, just saying, hey, for every pot over, you know, $20, we're going to segregate out $2. And at the end of the night, we're going to give that to a good charity for this time of year. So
that's really
just want to drop that note again, you know, this time of year when you're having home games. It's kind of fun. You can still have your game, still have your socialization, and maybe make a little bit of a contribution to a charity that's near and dear to your heart, in the spirit of the season. So
I love what you did there with the socialization, because that works perfectly into, you know, what we want to try to get people to do here. Please, by all means, reach out to us on Facebook at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, or we're also on Facebook at Top Pair. Let us know, you know, what sort of charity poker type of stuff that you're doing for the holidays. Maybe some interesting things that we've never covered here on the podcast before. Some interesting ideas for other people, how they can, you know, for other home game hosts, how they can do some charity type of event, you know, really, as the, you know, in the spirit of the holiday season, that would be really great, you know. So by all means, go ahead, reach out to us. We'd be happy to hear from you.
Good point. Yeah, we love to. And if you're just the basic email person, which I am a lot, it's just a very simple feedback@toppair.net.
Yep, 100%.
Well, I'm very excited about the guest for this show. He's got a tremendous background and a focus on the type of poker played in most home game settings. After these messages, we'll hear what he has to say. Are you hosting a home poker game but don't have the space for a dedicated poker table?
Have you tried playing on the kitchen or dining table only to have cards fly off and the chip stacks crumble?
The Poker Hoodie Snug Fit Game Surface and Table Pad is the perfect solution. Play like the pros wherever you go.
The smooth, padded gaming surface of the Poker Hoodie will instantly convert your dining, kitchen, or patio table into a poker table and take your game to the next level.
Cards are easy to pick up and glide smoothly. Chips bounce gently and are easy to control, plus spills are cleaned up with no fuss.
Soft and pliable neoprene conforms to your table's unique surface, and the flexible tightening system ensures a snug fit.
The logo carry bag neatly stores your poker hoodie and allows you to take your game on the road.
Art graphics are easily applied, so you can add your favorite logo or team mascot. It's a great idea if you're planning a poker club or a charity event and want to showcase the main sponsors.
Visit PokerHoodie.com for all the details, or click the link on the Top Pair homepage.
Poker Hoodie looks forward to seeing you at your next home game.
Seat open, table one.
Hey, wait a sec. I know this guy. He sat on my left yesterday. I wish I remember how he played.
You should have taken notes.
Oh, come on. I'm not bringing a notebook to the table. I'll look like a fish.
You don't have to. There's an app for that. Poker Notes Live. Notice a tell? Want to keep track of your live poker sessions? Use the Poker Notes Live app to tag and classify your opponents. Record your wins and losses and improve your overall performance at the poker table. Poker Notes Live. Get it now on Google Play and the App Store. Don't ante up without it. Brought to you by CardPlayerLifestyle.com.
Hey, look who we found hanging around. Let's get a mic for him and see what he has to say.
Hey, welcome back, and welcome to our show today, our guest, Alan Schoonmaker. He's a psychologist, a university professor, business advisor and consultant, plus a prolific author of poker articles and books. I hope it's all right if I address you as Dr. Al, and it's a pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Glad to be here.
How you doing, Dr. Al? Nice to hear your voice again.
Great to talk to you, Robbie.
So let's start back at the very beginning. You know, you've had a great academic career, PhD in psychology, been in the business world, been teaching at university level. How did you meld in poker? And you seem like you've got the focus into poker now. How long have you been playing poker, and what prompted you to get involved in the poker world?
I started playing poker when I was about 13. I was a caddy, and they always had a game in the caddy shop. And I'm a kind of a bookish sort of person, so I read a couple of books, and it was extraordinarily easy because I was the only guy who had ever read a book about poker. And so I knew that you shouldn't play every hand, for example, that you should be looking at the other players instead of thinking about your own cards. I learned that my very first lesson in poker psychology was from Oswald Jacoby, who was a great bridge and poker player, and he said, if you see somebody who's overly casual, beware. And I remember a guy named Jack casually made his bet, whatever it was, 25 cents, 50 cents, and he sat back and smoked a cigarette, and I folded whatever I had, a pair of sevens or something, and he had aces, and I played a five-card stud. And I've been a believer in poker psychology ever since.
Wow, yeah, pair of sevens is a pretty strong hand in five-card stud. That's great.
I'm not sure what I had, but I know that I looked at his ace, I looked at his casual behavior, and I said, Alan, get the hell out of here.
Well, you know, we touched upon that you used to teach psychology at UCLA and Carnegie Mellon University. You know, when you were talking about, you know, it's about playing the players, it just sort of reminded me of the movie Rounders. And, you know, as a member of the faculty, I'm kind of wondering, did you ever participate in sort of like a faculty poker game like, you know, we saw on the big screen or something like that?
Well, actually, I played an awful lot of poker from about 14 until about 25, 26. And then after that, I played hardly at all because I was a graduate student. Mm-hmm. And then I was the faculty member and I was a dad. And I had, so I didn't play any poker at all to speak of for, 30 odd years.
Wow.
I had other things to do.
Right.
And then when I was getting to be an old guy, I said, hey, let's keep my mind working. Let's go back and play some poker. And I went down to Atlantic City, and they had just started poker. It was in 1995, 96, something like that. And they would play a whole lot better than the people in the caddy shop. They, you'd play an eight-handed, seven-card stud game, and six people would see the 4th Street. Sometimes eight people would see 4th Street.
Wow.
In fact, people would even say, you know, I'm always going to see the next card. If I don't have anything after 4th Street, knock it out. And if you can't beat a game like that, you know, you should give up the game. It was really astonishingly easy in those days. I have no idea how it is now. Atlantic City, of course, is in bad shape now.
Right, but it's astonishingly hard to find a game like that, I will tell you. You know, you really won't find a place where, you know, maybe in a few home games here and there, but you won't find something where seven people are hanging around till 5th Street, usually.
Well, the poker has, the level of the game has improved spectacularly because A, it's on TV, B, there's a zillion books out there, and C, there's places like Card Runners and Deuces Cracked and so on that have a ton of educational videos. Then you got all kinds of things like Poker Tracker and Hold'em Manager.
Sure.
I mean, today's kids are immeasurably better than I was at their age. I mean, I would have no chance at all against today's 22-year-olds. None at all.
Mm-hmm.
They're just really good.
Well, and then it looks like you made the journey and made Vegas your home. How long ago was that hop made?
I moved to Las Vegas in the year 2000, and it's one of the four or five best decisions of my entire life.
Wow.
I'm a refugee from the cold weather. I really dislike cold. And here I am, it's going to be 62 or 63 degrees today.
Gorgeous, in December. Wow.
Yeah, it's December. And I love this town. It goes 24-7. I got a whole bunch of friends, all of whom are poker players. It's the only place in the world where you can call somebody at 2 o'clock in the morning and you got about as much chance of reaching them as you do 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know? And it's not all unusual to meet somebody at 3 o'clock for coffee, you know? Why not? 3 a.m.
Right.
It's just full, open, informal town. I love it.
So was poker the big draw that brought you to Vegas? I mean, along with the weather, too, but at that time, did you kind of make the decision in your life, like, okay, I want to kind of focus on poker. I want to focus on playing and writing and immersing myself in it.
Absolutely. And I knew I was going to go to one of the two poker capitals of America, either Los Angeles or Las Vegas. And Las Vegas had the attraction that Card Player Magazine was here and 2+2 Publishing was here. And, of course, I was with both of them. And I went to L.A., and the traffic was terrifying to me. It's like a blood spurt over there.
I'm originally from Los Angeles, and I'll tell you, yes, the traffic is still just as bad, if not worse.
Yes, and I have to tell you, I decided I was in Los Angeles for 3 days, and I found that I was driving like them. And I said, Alan, if you stay here, you're going to be, you know, carrying a 38 and blowing people away. Because I'm serious. I found myself, I was always a considerate driver, and I was on a freeway, and somebody was trying to come up on the, you know, approach ramp, and I found myself inadvertently speeding up so he couldn't get on. I said, what are you doing, Alan? You know, like that. The LA brings out the worst in me, you know, that residual monster that we all have. So I decided I come out here to Las Vegas where people are a lot nicer, at least on the roads.
Yeah.
And I'm there. I like LA. I was a UCLA professor. I mean, I loved LA as a town, but the traffic is, forget it, fellas.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned 2+2, and you mentioned Card Player magazine, and you know that's actually where I first came across your name. And I read you know some of the psychology and strategy articles that you had put there. You know, how long have you been writing for them and been associated with 2+2? How did that even begin?
Well, I wrote my first book for 2+2 called The Psychology of Poker, mm-hmm. and. I have to tell you, writing for 2+2 is a wonderful experience because Mason Malmuth is the epitome of a hands-on publisher. Mm-hmm. Every single word that comes out of 2+2, he has edited, and he's probably run it past David Sklansky. And so the book was improved immensely. Remember that we did this before the internet, before we had emails and stuff.
Right.
And so he'd send me a copy of the manuscript with a whole pile of handwritten corrections. And then I'd say, but this and that. And it took us, several weeks to agree on the book, but it became immeasurably better because those two guys were involved in it. Hmm. And then Mason was writing then for Poker Digest, and he got me into Poker Digest. David was writing also. So I worked for Poker Digest. Then Barry Shulman, who's the boss at CardPlayer, bought out Poker Digest, and I went over to 2+2 in the year 2002. So I've been there. I've written about 170, 175 articles for 2+2, and another 25 or so. Yeah, for CardPlayer, yeah. And I also wrote a little bit for 2+2 magazine.
Uh-huh. It's interesting, like, you know, you mentioned a lot of the kids these days and the 20-year-olds and, you know, that sort of thing. It, you know, it's good, you know, if any of our listeners out there, you know, like me in their 30s or a little younger in their 20s, they're familiar with 2+2 primarily as the online forum, but, you know, it's good to learn a little bit of the backstory there that it started out as a publishing house of books and magazines.
Wait a second. If you take the top 20 selling books, poker books of all time, at least 6 or 8 of them are from 2+2.
For sure. 100%.
Oh, yeah. Chariot Poker is considered by many people, including myself, as one of the best books, probably as the best book. All of Harrington's books are from 2+2. Hold'em mm-hmm. Poker for Best Players from 2+2. Ed Miller's Small Stakes Hold'em is from 2+2. And those are all very, very big sellers.
I'll tell you one I really like. And I was thrilled when we found out we were going to get you on the program because you were the co-author. It was that D-U-C-Y that you wrote with David Sklansky. And I think that's just a great book. I think that's a must for any poker player. I love the format, the way it's laid out, where David basically proffers a premise, comes up with kind of a real-life example that makes sense rather than just talking in theory and very technical stuff. And then it's kind of a point counterpoint, you know, then you jump on right after that and you give your perspective on that same premise and some of the things he said. So I highly recommend that book. I found it to be extremely informative and very entertaining.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about David. David is an astonishingly intelligent guy. I worked in big league academia, and I've had lunch like 40 or 50 times with Herb Simon, who won the Nobel Prize. And, I've worked when I was in Berkeley with a couple of other Nobel nominees, and David is as smart as they are. He really is.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it.
More intelligence.
I believe it.
Yep. Well, I want to just sort of go ahead.
David loved to catch me in errors because I was a college professor. He wanted to show he was smarter than me. I said, David, you don't have to do that. I know you're smarter than me.
I wanted to ask you, you know, with the books and, of course, you know, hundreds of poker strategy articles that you've published and, you know, all the writing that you've done, what is it that motivates you? I mean, that's a lot of work, a lot of time you're putting into this. You know, why do you feel the need to share your knowledge with the world, or, you know, to educate poker players?
Well, first of all, I don't write a whole lot about strategy. I write almost exclusively about psychology. I'm a psychologist.
I would say it's a subcategory of strategy then.
Okay. And I did write one book about strategy, which I'll plug right now. It's called How to Beat Small Poker Games, because that's a different sort of thing. But mostly I write about psychology because I'm a lifetime educator. That's all I ever did, really. Mm-hmm. I was a college professor, and then I ran a consulting company, and I taught classes on industrial psychology, mostly selling and negotiating all over the world, in about 28 different countries. And I just love to teach. And I write, and I teach, and that's about all I know how to do. You know, don't ask me to do anything useful. You know, I mean, I'm serious. If my computer goes bad, I yell for help. If my car doesn't start, I call AAA, you know, but when it comes to words, I'm pretty good.
Well, when I was doing some research in that, I came up with a quote, and I don't know where it came from. It might have even brought from your Beating Small Games Poker, but it, as you know, we're the home game poker podcast. We kind of try to zero in on that niche, people that are attending home games and hosting home games. And this quote from you, it says, "I play only smaller games because maximizing my profits is much less important to me than relaxing, is much less important to me than relaxing and learning about people. Yep. I became a psychologist because I enjoy people watching, and a card room is a wonderful place to do that. Players in small games are much more interesting than some serious players. They're more varied, open, and relaxed. They laugh more, tell better stories, and never forget that the purpose of playing in any game is to have fun. As the stakes get higher," and I love this paragraph, "the players become more serious and more homogenized. Most of them study the same books, know the same odds, and try to use similar strategies. In the smaller games, there are more rocks, more maniacs, more calling stations, more nerds, more deluded experts, and more oddballs, which means I learn more and get better material for my writing." And that list of categories, anybody that plays in home games or host games can think of, okay, yeah, that's who this guy is. Oh, yeah, that's what this guy is.
Plenty of maniacs and calling stations, that's for sure.
And deluded experts.
Well, the deluded expert's one of my favorite characters, because you meet him, I guess, 2-3 times a week. It's somebody who really can't play worth a damn, but he can teach you how to play.
Right.
And not only does he lose money, but he insults you after he loses it. Because if you were smarter, he would have won. And I'm very serious. You know, come on, you've all seen that. The guy who tells you, how could you make that stupid play, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, I'm laughing with you because I totally agree.
Yeah. And the point about fun is, one of the things I find fascinating about the world of poker is that so many people who write books think that people play to win. And the typical error in the typical problem with most poker books is that they're written by very good players who will teach you how to beat other very good players. Mm-hmm. But you aren't going to play against very good players if you're in small games. And you better learn how to deal with people who aren't quite sure whether a straight beats a flush. You know?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm not sure which one it is. Can you remember?
And, come to our game, I'll tell you.
And the other thing is that there is a myth in poker that everybody wants to win. And Ellie, that's not true for even at the highest levels, there's other motivations. But the lower you go, the more people are playing just for the fun of it. Yeah. And the reason people play badly is extraordinarily simple. It's more fun.
Uh-huh.
It's boring to throw away your cards hand after hand after hand. It's fun to play crap and beat the experts. It's fun to catch and gut shot straight draw. And if you lose money, oh, well, that's the way it goes. I don't do that, but that's what the other people do, and I get into that. I got to tell you, the cover of my latest book, How to Beat Small Games, is a picture of a large pot with pocket aces being cracked by a deuce seven offsuit.
Uh-huh.
And if you can't deal with that emotionally, if you're going to get really bent out of shape, and you hear this stuff, I can't beat this game because there's too many idiots, I can't beat this game because they don't respect my raises, they're playing small games.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I read a little article or an email I follow. I have never attended, and I hate it, and I know I talk about it a lot. I've never attended that Wednesday poker discussion group you guys have down there in Vegas, but I read the emails on it, and one of them talked about a presentation that you did there a couple of weeks ago, and the question was asked, in a typical poker table of, eight people, how many idiots do you want at the table? How many subpar, fish type of players do you want? And the response was, I guess, people was, oh, four or five. I really don't want any more than four or five really fish at the table, because you get more than that, and they're calling everything, and they're sucking out on you, and they don't know how to play, and it slows down the game, and it's just frustrating. And then it said, when everybody was through, spouting that, Linda Johnson piped up and she said, I'd just as soon everybody on the table be a subpar player, because there's going to be a lot of frustrating instances, but eventually, if I'm going to play poker, I'd rather play against somebody that's less experienced and less talented than I am.
Well, that's the reason she's a Poker Hall of Famer.
That's right, and Linda is an absolutely delightful person, in addition to being one hell of a good poker player. And she can say something like that, and even though she was disagreeing with people, they didn't get uptight about it.
Oh,
And it really is very simple math. Bad players lose, good players win, and the more bad players you have, the more money gets lost. The more good players you have, the smaller your share of the winnings are. If I have to share with two or three other good players, I get one-third or one-fourth of the bad player's money. I'm going to have all of it. And that means, of course, that I'm going to have to tolerate having my aces cracked again and again, and flopping a set and losing to a runner-runner flush and so on. That's part of the game.
Yeah. Yep. No, and again, I think that's one of the key foundations of that D-U-C-Y book. That he talks about the positive EV. And I think that's what a lot of people, they look at, oh man, every time I do that, my aces get cracked. Well, you take each individual situation by itself. You don't look at the long haul. You say, okay, given these cards pre-flopped, given the degree of talent of people I'm playing with, am I positive EV or negative EV? And you take it hand by hand. You don't make these generalizations.
Yeah, it's very hard for people to accept that. For example, here's a wild question for you. You're in a no-limit game, let's say a significant one. You got eight players in the game, and you're the big blind. Everybody limps, a small blind completes. You shove in your stack. How many players do you want to call?
Hmm.
You mean irregardless of the card you have?
You have pocket aces.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, you
assume they have random cards, because that way you can, with random cards, it's easier to put it into poker stove and see which one, where you max out.
Right. Traditionally people say, oh man, I don't want to play pocket aces more than two or three at the very most opponents, but that's probably not the right answer.
The right answer, believe it or not, is everybody.
Right.
because as the number of players increases, the probability of winning decreases, but it decreases more slowly than the amount won. Uh-huh. And so with 7 players, you win approximately 30%, 32, 33% of the time, while with 1 player, you win approximately 80% of the time. So when you win 80% of the time, you win 80 minus 20 is 60, right?
Uh-huh.
While if you have 30% times 7, 30% of 200 of all that money is approximately triple what you would get if you played one heads up.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Now, remember, I said this is all in pre-flop. Now, it's very different than if you're going to have action afterwards, because then, of course, the real money goes into the pot after the flop. And if you get a lot of action after the flop with aces, then you're probably going to be beaten.
Right, right.
Yep.
That's why Doyle said once that aces are good cards for winning small pots and losing big ones.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
They're so hard to get away from. And if there's an ace on the board, it's very hard to get much action. And if there isn't an ace on the board and you get a lot of action, you're probably beaten.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Well, you know, one of the most important things to know how to do in poker is switch gears. So we'll switch just briefly. You know, we mentioned some of our younger listeners before. I'm sure we also have a number of listeners who are senior citizens. And, you know, if you travel around the United States, of course, you'll find a lot of senior citizens playing in poker rooms everywhere, as well as home games, of course. And, you know, yes, they tend to have more discretionary income. They've got more time. But, you know, from a psychologist's perspective, Dr. Al, what would you say are the main benefits of playing poker for senior citizens?
Preventing Alzheimer's.
Really? Wow. You'd go that far.
That's good to hear.
Just by chance, the book that will be out within 3 days is called Stay Young, Play Poker.
Wow.
And inspired by classes that my friend George Epstein has been teaching for several years at Los Angeles, sponsored by the Los Angeles Department or Commission for Parks and Recreation. And mm-hmm. It quotes George as saying that he's had hundreds of people take his classes. George is 89 years old.
Wow. Huh.
And he's still writing, he's still playing poker, he's still teaching. Wonderful guy. And he said, not one of my people, to his knowledge, has developed Alzheimer's or dementia.
Huh.
And the book early on has a summary of some research that I've checked out with George and with a couple of very, very knowledgeable people. Professor Arthur Reber wrote the dictionary, a Penguin Dictionary of Psychology, and
sure.
Dr. Jacqueline Moskow is a researcher in neurology. Mm-hmm. And the evidence could not be clearer that when it comes to thinking, you have the same rule that you have with physical and mental exercise. Use it or lose it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to stay mentally healthy, you've got to keep your brain working. I don't care whether you're working at playing bridge, doing Sudoku, doing crossword puzzles, but the important thing is to keep active. And poker has an extraordinarily demanding game, and it's also a social game. You can't play poker by yourself.
Right.
And so you have to interact with people, whether you like it or not. You got to get off your butt and go out or play it up. And so you've got social interaction, you've got mental stimulation. And one last advantage that poker has, it's fun.
That's for sure.
It's fun. You can do it for several hours while very, very few people are going to do puzzles for several hours.
Right. Uh-huh. For sure.
So I think poker is the ideal way to stay young.
That's that's a fantastic answer. And I got to just, you know, tell our listeners, you know, buried in there is a great tip. You know, if you really want to go out and play cards and your spouse won't let you, just tell him, hey, I'm just going to prevent Alzheimer's. And, you know, that's a great excuse to get out of the house.
Hey, let me tell you, David Sklesky and I wrote an article many years ago called Poker is Good for You, and it was partly for the younger people on 2+2 so they could tell their parents, hey, Mom, I'm learning study habits, I'm learning math, I'm learning this, I'm learning that, I'm developing discipline. Okay?
I love it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Brendan is extremely committed to math education. And Nevada is horrible in math. So we're very, very close to the bottom of the charts. And we believe that if you play math, you know, most people, young people feel like math, who needs it? Well, if you play poker, you learn, I need it. Because you can't play poker very well without understanding math.
Right.
And so parents have said to us, you know, I'm amazed. Johnny would never do math before, and now he looks forward to it. He studies it because he's playing poker.
Yeah. No, that's great. So,
do we have time for one more question, Bruce?
Oh, yeah.
We have time for more than one question.
We've got some time.
Oh, sure. Very cool. Okay, I have one last question, at least on my list over here. Dr. Al, I don't know if you remember, but about 4 years ago, you and I were in touch with regard. I have an app that I promote that I help develop called Poker Notes Live. And you were the first person actually in the poker world who I contacted to try to get the word out. And you helped me. You connected me to Chris Wallace. And he was nice enough to have me on the Under the Gun podcast. He told me about, your grandchildren in Israel. I don't know if you remember, but first of all, I just want to thank you very much for starting me along that road. And, you know, maybe you'll be happy to know thousands of people have now downloaded the app. So first of all, thank you very much.
Oh, I'm delighted to hear that. I'm a fanatic note taker.
That's exactly what my question is. What can you tell us about taking notes in poker?
Read my book called Your Best Poker Friend. It's got a whole chapter on taking notes. And what's fascinating to me is that in virtually every one of the learned professions, people take notes. If you go to a doctor who doesn't take notes, walk out. You go to a lawyer who doesn't take notes, walk out. You go to an accountant who doesn't take notes, or a psychologist, walk out, because he can't remember you. He really can't. And the typical poker player does not take notes because he thinks his memory is sufficient. And that answer is total, absolute bullshit. I got a very good memory, believe me. You can't get a PhD from Berkeley without a good memory. And right. I know if I don't write a whole bunch of notes, I'm going to forget them. In addition, which player, here's a question, a kind of rhetorical question for your audience. Which player should you take the most notes on?
I'd say probably I would guess the person who you think the best player is. That's my guess.
No. Yourself.
Ah, trick question, doctor. Uh-huh.
I'm curious.
I agree with you.
All the time, which is, how could I be so effing stupid as to make that play? I'm serious.
I agree with you.
Or why was I smarter today than I was yesterday? Or what's wrong with my play today? Or why am I distracted? Or etc. And let me tell you something. The typical person feels that real poker players don't take notes. They don't need them. Well, I'm quoting now from Dan Harrington. Harrington Yep. said, at the top levels of poker, people take hundreds of pages of notes about their opponents. Hundreds of pages. That's direct from Dan Harrington, who's in the Poker Hall of Fame.
And the main event winner at the World Series, of course.
Yep. And the author of four or five really big-selling books. Dan is a terrific guy. And he said, now, maybe you think your players, you may think you're smarter than Dan Harrington, but I don't think you are. And I know I'm not.
Well, so you I'm heard it directly. Yeah, exactly. What do you call it? You heard it directly from the doctor. You got to take notes. That's for sure.
Now you said that you've got kind of three books right now. They're in the hopper, and I assume the one is the How to Beat Small Poker Games, which I think is directly hits on a lot of the home game players. the one you mentioned, and I apologize, I forgot the title. I hope you say it again.
Stay Young, Play Poker.
Stay Young, Play Poker. And, of course, we'll put links to those on our homepage for this. And then you mentioned that you had another one that was just coming out talking about playing Kill Pots.
Well, this won't be out for another four, five, 6 weeks. I'm just finishing it up, and then there's a whole problem of conversion and proofing and so on. It's called How to Beat Killed Hold'em Games. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that because I was playing in Killed Games, and I looked around trying to get help, and I couldn't find any.
so you got to write it yourself.
I wrote the book. I wouldn't tell you. The very first page said, one reason for writing this book is the best way to learn a subject is to teach it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I want to learn how to play Killed Games, so I wrote a book about it. Well, I'm writing a book about it. I wrote a whole pile of articles years ago for 2+2 magazine, and now I'm just compiling them into a book.
Yep, that's great. So we'll, we'll definitely put notes on these and links on these.
Thank you.
We really want to thank you for taking your time to share some of your stories and your outlooks. Hugely beneficial.
Loved it.
Any other projects, any other priorities, any other things that you're focusing on you'd like to tell us about?
Not at the moment. What I've done is I've made a whole change in my life. I think that the day of the long, expensive printed book is over, or almost over. Mm-hmm. And I'm now writing short, inexpensive books. How to Beat Small Games is $3, $2.99. And Stay Young, Play Poker is going to be $5. And the Kill Game will be someplace in that area. And they're a lot shorter. They take an hour and a half to read. It's a different game, and I'm just learning how to do it, frankly. I know how to write books, but how to promote them and so on is a real challenge to me because I've never done that before.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I'm an addict of the Kindle. My nieces and nephews, I'm closer to your generation by far than I am to Robbie's generation. And it took me a while to make that transition. But now that I've got the Kindle, you know, as far as having it with me all the time, if I get a spare moment at a car repair place or a coffee shop or something, I've got all sorts of stuff there that I can read. So I agree with you. I think the day of the large book is gone, and I think the day of the printed book is gone. The electronic format is definitely, you know, the 800-pound gorilla when it comes to publishing these days.
Well, there's several reasons for it. The first is it's just one hell of a lot cheaper. You go to Amazon, and you'll see that they have exactly the same book in printed or Kindle format, and the Kindle book is half the price, two-thirds of the price, 40% of the price. Hell. And what you're exactly the same as me. I don't know what I feel like reading. I'm having a cup of coffee, and I pull out my cell phone, and maybe I don't feel like reading about poker, so I can read a mystery novel. Or I can read a history book, or whatever I damn feel like, because it's all on my cell phone, or my tablet, or my computer. And when I go on a trip, it used to be I'd wonder, well, what book should I take to read on the plane? And so I wouldn't know. Now I got them all with me, 63, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Well, let's jump in great. And say one thing, talking about, you know, how to get people to know about this book. It's, you know, I'm in marketing. That's my full-time job. And one of the things you should definitely do, and we're so happy that we're able to have you on this show, the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast. If anyone out there is listening, by all means, have Dr. Al as a guest. He's a great guest, and we have certainly enjoyed talking to him. And you know, a lot of great information, great stories, and really, you know, so much. It's been wonderful talking to you. It's the perfect type of information that our audience is listening for.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yep, it's been a pleasure. Let's keep in touch. When you get new things coming up and that, drop us a note, and we'll make sure we'll give you the publicity and promotion to our audience.
Thank you.
It's been a delight talking to you.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Al.
Thank you.
There are bad beat stories, and then there are bad beat stories. When we last had Gene from Poker Hoodie on the show, he related one that I'm still chuckling about. It's worth repeating.
One outer. A humorous, peculiar, significant, or noteworthy story from the past poker home game.
Well, Robbie, a couple of episodes while you were out check-raising people, we had a guest host on, Gene Tull, Gene of the Poker Hoodie fame, and he had some wonderful stories, things that he talked about playing poker and home game poker and some of his ventures that he had back east before he moved to Vegas. Mm-hmm. And one that I just keep thinking about that I think is hilarious. They talked about the place they played a lot. One of the hosts had actually a spare house that was vacant, that he was, I don't know, thinking of turning it into an investment property or something, but it was kind of, empty that they could play poker in and didn't have to worry about, interrupting a family or keeping the noise down, right, or cleaning up, tidying after themselves and things like that. Mm-hmm. But he talked about one time when one of the players, got his drink on a little bit too much, and the kind offer was made, you want to just pass out here or sack out here tonight, don't want you driving home, but let's go ahead and crash here. And the guy said, yeah, that's great. Woke up in the morning and was, a little groggy, looking around, and saw the host dog, I guess, that kind of hides out in that house too. Mm-hmm. Looking around for his stuff, and there was his false teeth, and the dog was chewing on him. So for that poker game, that particular time, it was a bad beat. Not only lost money, but he lost his teeth.
That's for sure.
Lost your teeth at a poker game.
All the cards have been dealt for this episode of Top Pair. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and entertaining. Robbie and Bruce will be happy to have you join them for our next show. Just a reminder, we love your input. Contact us via email at feedback@toppair.net. Give us a follow on Twitter at Top Pair and like our Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast Facebook page. After all, we're not always right, just 99% of the time. For a more in-depth look at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, including access to past episodes, topics to be covered in the future, and links to information mentioned in the show, log on to our website at toppair.net.